And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Houck.
All right. Good evening, everybody out there, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In other words, what you have brought into this world. In fact, helping you remember and reclaim that which you have always been and who you are at your core. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And every broadcast, as you know, if you've been following me for some time, is dedicated to this integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all placed within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and our relationship with God or the divine. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or if you want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's all one word right there. Or I also have another website. It's more of a personalized website. It's www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. And either one, I will be able to respond to your comments. And if you would like to call in tonight and be part of the show, or, you know, if you want to call in with any insights or questions or general conversations on tonight's topic, I just invite you to call that toll-free number. It is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And as always, I will be taking your calls after the break. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, this broadcast will be and be posted on the BBS Radio website, so then you can go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archive section and listen to previous shows. You know, these podcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, Amazon Music, as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM out of New York. That's on station 3 on the weekends. Well, as I shared the last time, I just want to continue, just a nice reminder, because I get new listeners all the time. And I just wanted to say that when I started this entire series of Reclaiming Authenticity, I really wanted to emphasize this integration of spirituality and our mental health, because at the time, nobody was doing that, you know, and it's like, does spirituality and mental health really go together? And I think they do. You know, I think they fit nicely, like peas and carrots or peanut butter and jelly, you know, pick your metaphor, you know, because one thing is for certain, I have not only seen through these broadcasts, but also throughout my clinical practice, is that there's a growing awareness and a growing hunger for the need for people to not only integrate their mental health, you know, their mental health issues with their spirituality, but also they want to apply their spiritual growth within the context of relationships, especially healing from intergenerational traumatic experiences. And the benefit of healing from traumatic experiences is that we dispel any mental or emotional distortions of who we think we are. And we come a little bit closer to discovering the fullness of who we truly are as souls. In other words, get all this stuff out of the way that's clouding our vision. You know, move everything out that just weighs us down so that we can see clearly and understand more fully who we are as souls. And not just what that looks like and not just what that sounds like, but really who we are, embracing our authentic selves. Well, it was Edgar Cayce who was considered to be the father of holistic medicine and the most documented psychic of the 20th century. He once wrote that what is truly valuable in thought or activity and in experience is this sense of appreciation and this inner realization and understanding of the self, namely, understanding the self in relation to others and the self in relation to God. Meditation is a means to this end. Now, he was not the first one to say this or to come up with this because of meditation, but, you know, certainly putting it in the context of our relationships. And also, Dr. Harold Koenig, who I met well over 15 years ago, who was the director of the Center of Spirituality and Theology and Health down in North Carolina. He also notes that a person's religious and spiritual beliefs and practices are very important resources for coping with illness. Of course, that was his specialty. And he saw, and he just his research just had shown just what that does for a person who struggles with some sort of physical illness or trying to overcome something physical or mental and emotional. And there has been research in this area ever since, you know, he had conducted this that demonstrates a connection between your beliefs and your sense of well-being, such as, do you have positive beliefs? Are you finding comfort? Do you gain an inner strength from your religion or spirituality? Do you have a deeper sense of meditation? What about contemplative prayer? And that's just to name a few. And so his research highlighted the belief that improving your spiritual health, even though it may not cure an illness, it certainly helps in your overall well-being, as well as feeling a higher sense of purpose or peace and hope and meaning in your life. And you also may experience having more confidence or improved self-esteem and self-control. So there are many, many benefits, many positive outcomes related to the integration of our mental health and our spiritual health. And this is where I come in, because I have a keen interest in helping people live authentic lives by helping them find the courage to be able to reclaim what has always been in them in terms of this integration and remembering who they have always been and who they are as a soul. Because I have a solid belief that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life in terms of our giftedness, our skills, our talents, our strengths, our character traits, so on and so on. And how we live our giftedness, let's just say, is in and through various relationships. We can't get out of it. You know, relationships is kind of the common denominator that just dictates everything about our lives. And this aspect is very important when considering who we are, because although we may have similar gifts, and although we may have similar skills and talents and strengths and character traits and so forth, no two people express these identically. In other words, each of us has a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. We can try and imitate others, and we have our heroes, and I'm going to share one hero that I had growing up. But no one has the ability to be able to duplicate us, because within us is what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as hachaetas. It's a thisness. It's a uniqueness, if you will. And I am often fond of explaining this word to the kids and teenagers. They just like the Latin word hachaetas. And they, you know, say it like, okay, you know, that's enough. 20 times is enough, hachaetas. But I want them to really understand it's like a thumbprint. Everybody has a hachetas. Everybody has uniqueness. That's the thumbprint. But just as no two thumbprints are alike, no two uniqueness is the same. It's just not. Everybody has a hachetas, a thisness to it. So this is where I believe lies the importance of, having this realization of who we truly are. What is that uniqueness as not just a thumbprint, but really who we truly are as a soul? What is that hachetas where we are all souls, but where does this uniqueness come in? Well, as I said, later on in the broadcast, I'll be taking your calls because I really would like to hear your heart on today's subject. Vaya con Dios, clearing negative energy held by trauma. Now, you might be recalling the words of the Zac Brown Band, adios and vaya con Dios. Has nothing to do with that. Okay, so let's come away from the beach. Let's come away from putting our butt in the sand and toes in the water. Okay, it's not that at all. Okay, but it has everything to do with my experiences with clearing land of its traumatic negative energy, as well as releasing the souls who have been bound by that negative energy. And, I wanted to say on the outset that clearing the land of its negative traumatic energy and the souls that are being held by this trauma was something that I never learned in, let's shall I say, a formal education. But rather, this ability was something that I became increasingly aware of over time as other people started to point it out in me. Which is also typical for many people. That's how we just kind of learn things about ourselves because other people begin to notice it. And they go, hey, have you ever thought about, or did you ever know that when you do this, it's kind of that external confirmation. And then we become aware of it. And so we have this external, internal confirmation and affirmation where we start to act on it. So that's how it started with me. People just started to point this out and just like, oh, maybe there's something here. And the more I stepped out on faith, the more I realized, yes, there is something here. Because, ever since I was a kid, I've always been fascinated by the paranormal, or maybe I should just say the normal, the normal activity of a particular space or place. And my hero, okay, here's my hero growing up. Besides baseball players, and my favorite pitcher was Catfish Hunter. And if you know who he is, great. If you don't, shame on you. You should know who he is or was. Okay, but Catfish Hunter, he was my pitcher. But anyway, my other hero growing up was Harry Houdini. Ring a bell? Now, back in his day, Houdini was probably the most prominent escape artist, illusionist, and overall phenomenal magician. But in the later years of his life, Houdini became infatuated with spiritualism. And spiritualism really gained traction in the mid to late 1800s. It was a religious movement based on the belief that the dead could interact with the living. Okay, and today we have all kinds of studies and research and people sharing their experiences and like yes, this is certainly true that the living and the dead can interact, or should I just say the living here on Earth definitely interact with those who continue living elsewhere. Well, in fact, Houdini, in his day, really wanted to call out fraudulent mediums who pretty much con seekers out of their money. People would pay money and like, well, I want you to get in contact with my loved one. Oh yeah, sure, no problem. And then they would move some things around or make it sound like they were making contact, and just a lot of people were just being fleeced. And Houdini, caught wind of this, and he just said, look, this isn't right. Plus, Houdini had his own personal reasons of why he wanted to contact a deceased loved one. You know, for those of you familiar with Harry Houdini, it's like he wanted to contact his mother, his wife also. And they had a code word that, you know, if this is true, if you can make contact with me or I can make contact with you, we're going to share this code word so we know it's legit, that we're not being, you know, conned. Okay. Well, today, some paranormal investigators, you know, sometimes go in search of evidence of paranormal activity. You know, they've read it in a book or they're told stories or whatever, and they go to these places only to discover other plausible explanations for such sightings, for such activity. Well, unfortunately, I was often disappointed by the superficial results these investigators discovered. And then subsequently, when they were finished, they packed up their equipment and they left, following what they called a legitimate discovery. You know, for instance, their cameras and other EVP or electronic voice phenomenon equipment would always pick up some spiritual activity tied to a place of historical atrocity of bloodshed that involved a war or other crimes against humanity. And with their equipment, sometimes, yes, they were able to pick up things. Sometimes they didn't. But what left me unsettled about such endeavors was what the investigators did, is that they did nothing in terms of helping the spirits or the souls heal from their trauma and go on to be with God, vaya con Dios. Okay. And as I started to become more aware of soul consciousness at an early age, and I'm talking like 8, 9, 10 years old, I began to hear the cries of the wounded in very distinct ways. You know, like muffled cries and sobs in various states of consciousness. I mean, I thought I was going crazy as a kid, because whenever I would get in a crowd and there was just a lot of noise and clamor and, you know, just a lot of talking, you know, just the sounds that a crowd makes, I started to get overwhelmed and I started to tear up and get choked up, because I swear it sounded like people were crying. People were sobbing. People were in pain. And I didn't know where that was coming from. I didn't even know what that was. But the more and more I became aware of this soul consciousness, I started to make the distinction, the cries of the wounded in just various states of this consciousness. Now, this awareness, I believe, was not by accident, because you've heard me talk on this, you know, this broadcast before about my Native American Indian teacher, Tiwa, Pueblo teacher, who pointed out in his, you know, let me see your cut finger in your blood and ancestors lesson. You know, it's when I accidentally cut my finger and, you know, before I could wipe the blood away, he goes, what do you see? You know, he asks this question, what do you see? Like, I don't know, blood? You know, is it O positive? And he's like, no, who do you see? Like, I don't know, my mother, my father? You know, I still wasn't getting the lesson. And then he just had to come right out and just tell me, he goes, look, if you can see everybody who's come before you, in, you know, the DNA, you know, they're there in your single drop of blood. If you're able to see who have come before you, then you're going to be able to see who's coming after you. People that you are connected to through that blood soul connection. And when I realized that, I just went, oh, so that's what you call it. Okay. And so when he pointed out this blood and ancestors lesson to me, this also awakened me further on this journey to release the souls that have been trapped by trauma. Now, like I said, to achieve this, it was no longer sufficient for me just to simply hear their cries. But I soon found out it was time for me to visit these physical places that witnessed these crimes firsthand against humanity. It was now time to transform traumatic energies and heal the land and release these souls back to God. So I want to share some of these stories of just what I experienced. You know, it may not be anything you experienced or whatever. It's just I'm sharing my experiences. But before I do all this, I just want to explore this one question. Why is this all important? What impact does this have in our lives? After all, you know, if these atrocities occurred in the past, why does it matter for us today? And what does it matter for our lives today? Well, again, I'm convinced, quite simply, I believe we cannot move forward as humanity when there are people who are still affected by the atrocities of the past. You know, that intergenerational trauma where something has happened many, many, many generations in the past, but the people who are related act as if it's helping, or I'm sorry, act as if they are reliving it all over again, but they never lived through those atrocities. Why is that? Because the intergenerational trauma has never been healed, and perhaps the land has never been healed, and the souls that have been trapped by the bloodshed there have never been healed and sent to God. You know, where there have been crimes against humanity that result in mass graves from genocide or government and religious cover-ups or scandals, social injustices, oppression, torture, so on and so forth. I mean, we don't have to go that far back in history. You know, let's just go back into the most recent century, and it's there, just running rampant. But we can go back and we can just see the crimes that have been committed against humanity, the kind of like the playbook of just, you know, we're going to do away with a certain group of people, or we're going to do away with this, or we're going to cover this up and that, you know. And it's like we think we got it, we think we've covered it up, but hopefully you and I both realize that the dead do talk, because their souls and the blood that is shed cries out from the ground. You know, and all of these scandals and social injustices and oppression and torture and so forth suggest a uniqueness to intergenerational trauma that stains both the souls of the living and the deceased. I mean, for example, the deceased often become stuck in their trauma and unable to move on from where their death occurred. And this is because the land has been imprinted with the horrors of that genocide and desolation, to the extent that the blood of those who have laid slain cry out from the land. And we may attempt to forget about these tragedies as the so-called history books are written from a softer perspective that romanticizes the harsh reminders of the depraved human interaction. However, antiquity echoes beyond the grave. Voices of pain and suffering compel us that their stories need to be healed, need to be heard, and it needs to be told. And this psycho-spiritual disconnection is something that I believe the land doesn't forget. You know, the land indeed remembers. Souls and souls, you know, have trekked land for countless generations. You know, the air that they breathe is the same air we breathe. You know, the same sources of water from which they drank, we drink. The same mountains they've climbed for psycho-spiritual renewal, yeah, we climb those mountains. You know, these literal and spiritual paths have been blazed for us to follow, and our imprint on the land doesn't go unnoticed. And as we walk the footprints of our ancestors and relations, let's just say, as a great cloud of witnesses, they carefully observe our attitudes and our actions. Well, if you ever want to watch a cool movie, and this is the perfect time of the year, right around the corner from Halloween, you know, it's not a ghost story, but it's right up this alley of intergenerational trauma and how the land remembers. In fact, the movie is called Imprint. 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 And it was back in, I believe it was 2007. It was. And there's a quote in that particular movie where an old Native American Indian man is just standing in the middle of this field. And the next generation, younger woman, comes up and, "What are you doing?" And the man goes on just to explain this whole phenomena of how the land remembers. And he says to this young woman, "I listened to the screams of the wounded and dying carried on the wind across this prairie. Blood spilled in the ground. Now we forget about these things, but the trees, they remember. The rocks, they remember. And the earth, it remembers. They remember when we forget. The story is forever imprinted, imprinted on this land. And if we listen, listen really carefully, they will guide us. They will provide us with visions. They will tell us stories. Past, present, and future all touch one another. Time does not exist, because for spirits, time does not exist. But can you hear them? Can you hear their cries?" And that's a question we can ask ourselves even today. Do we hear the cries of not just the weak and the wounded? Do we hear the cries of those who have suffered just mercilessly at the hands of another human being, whether that be collectively or individually? Well, I really want to hear your heart on this particular subject. So again, if you would like to call in, the number is 888-627-6008. And as I said, I'm going to be taking your calls after the break. Please call in. I would enjoy, you know, just listening to your story and how you experience how land holds trauma, and how we, through our prayers or our presence and our positive intentions, heal the land, heal the people, and allow them to, via con Dios, go with God. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. All right, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the broadcast, I have been talking about, you know, how I've experienced, you know, just releasing lands that have held the negative traumatic energy and the blood from past crimes against humanity, as well as releasing the souls back to God who have been trapped by the trauma. Now, as I said at the very, very, very beginning of this broadcast, that this wasn't something I was taught in, let's say, an academic setting. I learned this through a lot of old school hard knocks. This is how you do it. And I believe there was a certain call and my Native American teacher, kind of awakened, there we go, proper English here, folks, awakened something in me. But let me share with you just kind of how I kind of backed into all this. The first time I cleared a house, let's just say, of a misguided soul that was just hanging around. Just hanging around his family's house. It was back in 1997. And this woman just called me out of the blue and she goes, "Dr. Hauk, you don't know me, but I was led to call you because your name kept coming up in my mind. I keep seeing my grandfather's spirit in our house, and I'm calling because I don't really know what to do." And I remember, you know, we had other conversations, but I remember just like, "Well, yeah, lady, I don't really know what to do either here. You know, why are you calling me?" But, you know, as we were talking, you know, I just like, okay, hear her out. Get the whole story. What's really going on here? And I sensed nothing traumatic around his death or in the family, but I knew, you know, his soul was worried about his family. And he was just hanging around and just wanted to watch over them just to make sure they were okay. Either way, I knew that he needed to go be with God. And afterwards, I learned that he knew it too. He knew I was coming. Now, I explained to this woman, it's like, "Okay, ma'am, yes, I'll agree to come." It was like a little farmhouse, you know, "I'll agree to come to the farmhouse, but give me 3 days. You know, there's some preparation work and I have to clear my schedule and all that stuff. I just wanted to buy some time." Okay, so I said, I'll be there in 3 days on, you know, a certain time and so forth. And after I hung up with her, I immediately called my Catholic priest friend who had done exorcisms and he was well versed in the paranormal. And just for the sake of the, you know, the story, I was calling Keith. And I just said, "Keith," I told him the whole story. And I said, "Now, just what am I getting myself into here?" And we both agreed that there was nothing demonic, you know, nothing evil, no poltergeist going on there. We just both kind of sensed that, like, okay, this grandfather's soul was just kind of hanging out and he just needed to go be with God. And so 3 days had passed. I've done a lot of praying and, you know, just for my own protection and so forth, because like I said, never done that before. And I remember getting to this small farmhouse and there were two little dogs, you know, just about the size of a Pekingese, but they weren't Pekingese, but they were, you know, little yappy dogs. And they were jumping around and everything, barking because, hey, a stranger. And, you know, and so I thanked the woman who just said, you know, here's the living room and everything, and, you know, where she would often see him or his presence. And I said, "Okay, thank you. And, you know, she went down to another building. And I said, "When I'm finished, I'll come get you, and then you can see, you know, if anything had changed." But I kept the dogs with me. Like I said, I don't know why. I'd never done this before. It's like, there's a little company here, okay? And so the dogs were kind of like jumping around still, and, you know, and first of all, I went around and I sealed all the door frames and the windows with anointing oil that I had, okay? And I would often say, you know, prayers of protection. And then once that was all done, I sat quietly in the living room area. And we had a conversation. He didn't say anything to me, but I more or less did all the talking. You know, and I just, again, more or less just said, you know, "Look, your family appreciates the fact that you're hanging around. However, they want you to be at peace. They're fine. You know, and you've provided well for them," and, you know, so on and so forth, you know. And so I just led, you know, his soul to, in this, like a guided meditation. And I just said, "You know, right now I want you to see the hand of God coming down. And when you see the hand of God, I want you to reach up and take God's hand and vaya con Dios, go with God." And I just did that a couple of times. And then I just sat quietly. Didn't know what to expect. didn't sense anything new or anything. Like I said, nothing demonic or anything like that. But when I was finished, and I was like, okay, it's time to get up, the two dogs that were jumping around, yapping and all that stuff, were sitting beside me on the sofa, out cold. They had fallen asleep. I think they were, one of them was snoring a little bit. But I mean, they were out. They were totally at peace. And it's like, something happened. So I go down to this other building and I call the woman up and I go, you know, I think he's gone, you know, but you want to come to the house and check. And we get in there and, you know, she just looks around and she goes, oh my gosh, it feels lighter in here. There's no more heaviness. You know, it's not just light in terms of brightness, but like a weight had been lifted. And, you know, she just thanked me again. And I just said, you know, you're welcome. And then I, you know, we talked a little bit more and then I left and went down to a local diner and had a cup of coffee and, you know, a piece of lemon meringue pie. And I remember sitting there going, what the heck did I just do? You know, it was like I acted as if I've been doing this all along. And according to my Native American teacher, I probably have. So anyway, that's how I got started in all this, you know, just individual. But I also want to share with you a time when I was with my Native American Tiwa Pueblo teacher, and he really awakened something in me and just really took this to a whole new level. I don't know if anybody out there knows where Montauk, Long Island is in New York. But this is where this next encounter took place. I realized this afterwards that my Native American Indian teacher was already prepping me for this new way of transmuting negative traumatic energy. And again, out of the blue, you know, just minding my own business, and I get this phone call, and I was invited to assist him and two other people to perform a healing ceremony at Camp Hero State Park in Montauk, Long Island, New York. And again, I had not experienced releasing any souls trapped by tragedy, let alone intergenerational trauma on this scale or this magnitude. But, you know, I knew my teacher, I trusted my teacher, so yeah, sure, I'll go along. Why not? Now, besides this beautiful coastline, Montauk had often been linked to many suspect activities that involved the development of time travel and mind control experiments throughout World War II. And although never proven, eyewitnesses reported that, again, the United States government developed a powerful new psychological weapon that could drive their enemies insane by producing schizophrenic-like symptoms with the push of a button. So who are we going to test this on? I don't know. How do we know this works? Well, we have to find a population of who, you know, we can get results. Now, accordingly, people who were considered expendable were abducted and transported to the base, where they underwent excruciating periods of both physical and mental torture. Well documented. Okay. But this time on a Saturday afternoon in January, where it's just cold as all get out, a small group of us just walked the state grounds for a couple of hours. And I just kind of took my teacher's lead and like, I don't know where he's going. I'm just following here, folks. And that was up to the point where my teacher pointed to an open field, approximately about 100 yards from this huge ANFPS-35 radar dish. I mean, it's huge. Go on the website and it's still there. You know, just huge. And he said, that's where we need to begin our healing ceremony, about 100 yards from this radar dish. Okay. And as we marked off this grid and we prepared ourselves with prayer, and again, for protection, all right, that's one of the things he stressed to me. It's like, you don't know what you're getting into, so you got to protect yourself first and foremost. But as we prepared ourselves with prayer, we could feel the negative spiritual energy beneath our feet I mean, it was uncanny. Okay. And my chest felt heavy as the weight of years and years and decades of oppression on the victims. It was just so palpable. And so we marked off a circle and I followed my teacher's lead, and you know, we just all stood there in a little circle. There was four of us. But when he started to offer prayers in his native tongue, suddenly his knees buckled. And I remember catching him from collapsing to the ground. It was like I literally had to hold him up. And in that moment, we all felt this swoosh of energy blowing upwards, as I learned later that it was the land that was releasing its trauma and the souls that were bound there. And this energy release seemed to go on for hours and hours, but maybe at the most half hour, 20 minutes, a half hour, but it just seems like we were there a lot longer. And when this process was over, you know, we finished our ceremony by just blessing the land with more prayers. And we also had tobacco and sage offerings and so forth. Okay. And later that day, as we were staying at a friend's house, you know, just tears flowed from my teacher's eyes as he told us that he felt all the anguish and the pain that these experiments had caused the people, including the enormous negative energy that the land released when the trapped souls went to be with God. And he said that he not only felt this, but he saw and he heard, and he just described the people in great detail and the psychological experiments that were conducted on them. And to this day, he still gets choked up when he recalls this experience. And I have to say that I have never been the same since. Well, since that initial lesson with my Native American teacher, you know, my soul has been called to various places to offer prayers for trapped souls to be healed and released, as well as healing the land. And at times, I've been privileged, and I call it a privilege, you know, just to witness the souls being released by the land and returning to God. And at other times, I've also initiated the prayers so that others may complete the release later. You know, I found out that oftentimes I'd work in tandem with other people, even those I haven't met. They would come later, or maybe they came before me or so forth. But either way, there was such a release of the pain that had been suffered there. Okay. And something that I also learned, you know, in this work, there's just no room for the ego, but it does call for a humility, you know, to listen carefully to, let's just say, the ancestors' voices, as well as the stirrings of the soul of the universe. So, for example, you know, months before my fifth pilgrimage to Bear Butte in South Dakota, beautiful, beautiful place, I started to have dreams about the souls of Native American Indian children standing around at the base of this sacred site. And there were various tribes. There were Lakota, Cheyenne, Dakota, Crow, Hunkpapa, so on and so forth. And like I said, before my fifth pilgrimage, you know, other times, my previous trips, you know, I went there for my own spiritual awareness and renewal. But this time, in my dreams, these children were waiting for me to come and climb the mountain with them. I sensed that I was going to be part of helping them go with God. However, none of them appeared to be wounded by trauma. And perhaps they were the generations trapped by all the horrific energy from the bloodshed and the misery brought upon by the people of the United States government, you know, back in the day, back throughout history. And regardless, the closer the time came for me to leave for South Dakota and to be at Bear Butte, the more I started to hear the children sing and play in my dreams. In fact, when I reached Bear Butte, their voices were quite deafening. And I can still hear their laughter and songs in my soul to this day. It's almost like, okay, yes, great. We got his attention. He's coming. He's coming. Let's go. All right. Come on. Let's go. Let's celebrate. Well, I was standing at the bottom of Bear Butte. And again, I offered many prayers. And I also made tobacco and sage ties for gratitude and healing. And if you've ever been to Bear Butte, there is a path marked out and it just wraps around the mountain several times, a little over a mile or so, from the bottom all the way to the top. It was like a lookout area once you've reached the top. And as I started to climb, or shall I say, walk this path, I saw the children climbing with me. They were walking with me. Some were running on ahead and others just followed behind and some just stayed right by my side. Now, along the way, I would occasionally stop and catch my breath and hang prayer ties on the branches of the trees. And, it's like, okay, kids, just, you got an old guy here, so just take it easy on me. But they were still like running up and down, the path there. And when we reached the top, the souls of these children, one by one, were whisked away to heaven, as if entering this powerful vortex. And again, I didn't do anything, but just we reached the top, and I just lifted up my hands, and I just, go with God, vaya con Dios. And just one by one, I saw them, whoosh, 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 there they went. And when that was all done, I offered prayer ties of tobacco and sage for all the Native Americans as a means of asking forgiveness for the past atrocities and offering gratitude for their friendship and sowing the seeds of forgiveness, peace, and love. And I remember that when I came back down from the mountain, got a lot of water and just sat and collected myself, I returned to my motel room later that day in Sturgis. And if that name rings a bell, Sturgis, South Dakota, at the foothills of Bear Butte is where you have the big motorcycle rally every year, Sturgis, South Dakota. Well, anyway, I returned to my motel room later that day, and I remember being so physically exhausted that I slept for the rest of the day. I mean, I was out, okay? And the next morning, I returned to the southern base of Bear Butte. And I was just sitting there. And again, just, I had my drum and I had my Native American flute and I played and just, I drummed softly. And a lot of other people were climbing Bear Butte. And, interestingly, I could faintly hear their joyful songs from those at the top. And they waved their staffs and, eagle and hawk feathers and colorful tobacco offerings. And I smiled as I sensed the joy of these fellow climbers, not so much for reaching the top, but they were aware perhaps of now being part of something bigger, namely the healing of generations. And even the land felt lighter that morning. Well, the following day, I traveled south to Wounded Knee Cemetery, where approximately 300 Native American Indians had been killed and buried in a mass grave. Now, according to history, following the capture and killing of Chief Sitting Bull, the 7th Cavalry sent out to capture Bigfoot's people fleeing to Pine Ridge. Okay. And this pursuit was to finally put an end to the Ghost Dance movement and other perceived accounts of insurrection against the United States. Okay. Well, when the cavalry caught up to Bigfoot's camp on December 29th, 1890, that's right, 1890, they attempted to confiscate weapons from the people. And as the story goes, one of the cavalrymen tried to take a rifle from a Native American Indian who was deaf and he just couldn't understand. And so, in a panic, all of a sudden, a single shot ran out. And within seconds, the cavalry began to fire volley after volley after volley into the Sioux camp. and the Native American Indian men rushed to retrieve their confiscated rifles while the women and children ran for a ravine near the camp, only to be cut down in crossfire. Now, some historians believe the reason for the 7th Cavalry attack on Bigfoot's people was to take revenge for their regiment's defeat at Little Bighorn in 1876. Nevertheless, following the killing of Sitting Bull and the attack at Wounded Knee, the United States Army awarded 20 Medals of Honor to its soldiers. And as a result, Wounded Knee was hailed as the last major confrontation in the United States war against the Sioux. Now, to this day, the cemetery that is on top of this mass grave of 300 Native American people who have been killed, this cemetery serves as a painful reminder of a government's action in 1890. And I replayed this account in my mind as I just sat on a hillside just a stone's throw from this gravesite. And I stuck eagle feathers and hawk feathers in the ground with tobacco and sage to honor not only the ancestors but also the souls there. And that day, my prayers were very simple. I asked for the release of the souls still trapped by this tragedy, not exclusively within the cemetery itself, but also for the pain and oppression that is still evident throughout surrounding communities and extended reservations. I didn't experience anything phenomenal, but I just kept praying that prayer. And, kind of interesting, something I learned about myself is like nothing, dramatic or, happens in the moment of releasing the land and the souls are trapped by trauma. But I feel it afterwards. It's almost as if I step out of that powerful energy. And when I get back to my motel, I'm out cold. I mean, I just sleep. And I'm not just talking like 45 minutes. I'm talking a minimum 4 to 5 hours. I am just exhausted. Okay. Well, again, there are more and more stories about that I've written in two of my books, Reclaiming Authenticity and When Ancestors Weep. And, I just invite you to order that. It's very heavy reading. It's not an easy read, but there's just a lot of historical information. And what do we do when we become aware of atrocities, or we get a sense that the land is just hanging on to something traumatic that happened? And I've been to other places, as well. I've been over to Ireland. I've been, visited Cork and Bessborough Mother and Child Homes. Been up to Ontario, where the so-called mush hole was, and just releasing souls there at one of the industrial homes in Brantford. I've just been all over the world in terms of I feel called to these places, and I carry such a burden for people who are still just not only trapped by these atrocities, but also their ancestors, the ones who are living today are still trapped. Yeah. Well, I thank you for just being able to share this time with me. Again, I really want to hear your heart on this matter. So if you want to drop me a line, please do so, at either one of the websites that I had mentioned earlier in this broadcast. And I would just love the chat with you, so just shoot me an email as well. So this is Reclaiming Authenticity, and you have been listening to it this hour, and I thank you that you've spent this hour with me. I am Dr. James Houck, and I am just so excited that more and more people are becoming aware of just how do we clear negative energy, especially as it relates to intergenerational trauma. So between now and the next 2 weeks, until we talk again, just everybody out there, be safe. Have a great Halloween. And above all, behave yourselves. Okay, everybody take care and vaya con Dios. Go with God in everything that you do. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave a thousand comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauk. It's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.